What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Tuesday. I am Will Brinson. I am your host. That clinking sound you heard is not Jason Lockenfora, but it might be Sean Wagner joining us here to break down the Buccaneers. Sean is drinking bourbon and loudly clanking it. I'm drinking a Stone Coco Vesa, an Imperial Stout, and I'm drinking this mistakenly late at night. I have an 8 a.m. HQ hit. If you listen to this podcast, I might have already done my HQ hit. You can watch me on HQ at 8 a.m. by going to cbssports.com/live or firing up your Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, whatever device you want, using your phone, using your laptop. I'll be talking about football streaming live. It's our 24/7 streaming sports service for real fans. I highly recommend you check it out. But I'm drinking this beer because I'm celebrating because the over hit. And that means that I won my picks league, Sean, this week. That's a $250 prize for this week. And because Ben Roethlisberger managed to only have a semi-monster day, I won a bunch of fantasy leagues as well. But ultimately, the important thing that came out of this game, and by the way, we're going to have Brady Quinn joining us later, as well as Stephen O. The important thing is that the Steelers got their first win. They moved to 1-1-1 after a 30-27 wild victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that sends the Bucs to 2-1, ties them in first place in the NFC South with, I believe, are all four teams? No, the Falcons are in last place, right? Pretty good game from the Steelers. Pretty big game from the Steelers. Big Ben, 30 of 38, 353, three touchdowns, one pick. Juju Smith-Schuster, his top targeted wideout, 11 targets, 9 catches, 116 yards. Vance McDonald exploded on the scene, 5 targets, 112 yards, and a 75-yard touchdown in which he ended Chris Conte's life. I don't know, Sean, though, that I would say this is a good game for the Steelers.
Yeah, it was a really fun game, a really entertaining game. You had Fitzmagic looking horrible, looking like Fitz tragic in the first half. And in the second half, he suddenly is becoming the first player in NFL history to throw for 400 yards in three straight games. It was really fun. It had everything in it. I don't think it was well played, though, on either side. You look at the Steelers, they had 13 penalties for 155 yards. And I know there was a lot of questionable roughing the passer penalties, and that obviously contributed to the high penalty total. But the Steelers, to me, don't look like a disciplined team. They obviously have a multitude of weapons. They're going to score a lot of points. But I don't know if I walk away from this game being encouraged for either side. I think the takeaway is that both these teams can score points in a hurry, but they're also very flawed defensively. It seems like defensively it's either pass rush or bust. If they're not getting to the quarterback, they are just atrocious and can be picked apart.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. And I think we knew that the Bucs defense maybe isn't good, right? And maybe we knew the Steelers weren't any good either. I've been talking about them not being good for a while. Every single one of their games has been a shootout. Since Ryan Shazier got injured, they haven't been able to stop anybody. Because this was a primetime game on Monday night featuring a guy in Ryan Fitzpatrick who is now inconceivably thrown for – he's the only player in NFL history to throw for 400 yards in three straight games. You dropped that note in the Slack, and I just didn't believe it. I was like, that can't be true. It's just false. I was texting a buddy of mine about it. He's like, there's no way that's true. It's not. He's like, it's not true. I was like, it is. The Bucs comms just tweeted about it. Because this is on Monday night, I think that the performance by Fitzpatrick in the first half, which was not great, but also not, it got ramped up way too much. Like, if this had been a Sunday 1 o'clock game, people would be like, oh, like those numbers don't look great for Fitzpatrick. But one of his picks was a ball that was batted at the line of scrimmage and popped up. And the other was a miscommunication with Mike Evans. I didn't think he played that bad. He had a bunch of bad throws, but he ended up with a, you know, pretty decent, 30 of 50 is not great, but 4-11 and three touchdowns. He had an okay game and he almost led the Buccaneers back. I blame, not, don't blame him for the loss, but punting at the end of that game by Dirk Cutter. Come on, man. Like, that's, you can't punt down three with 236 left and having given up, you know, 413 total yards to the Steelers at that point.
Yeah, and it's not even like a hindsight thing where we're criticizing him. Like, no. As it happened, I was saying they're not going to get the ball back. And, of course, the Steelers, for all their faults with being sloppy and looking like they're not a well-coached team, they went out and they threw the ball to get a first down and ice the game. And give them credit for doing that. No, but I agree with you. You had a fourth and 10, yes, you're inside your own territory, but even if you don't get that first down, it's a 3-point game. If you get a stop, the Steelers are kicking a field goal. By the way, they already missed an extra point. They already missed a field goal earlier. Mm-hmm. Even if they make it, you're going to get the ball back with 2 minutes left with a chance to go win the game. And I really think if the Steelers get the ball there at the 25-yard line with 2:30 left, I don't think they're throwing it the way they're throwing it.
No, you're right. 100%. If
they just run the ball three times, they make them burn all their timeouts, and they kick a field goal, and then suddenly Fitzpatrick gets another chance. And on top of that, maybe you just convert on fourth and 10. I mean, how many penalties did the Steelers have to extend Bucs drives? They were asking to lose the game by punting there at the end.
Well, it was on the Tampa 20, it looks like, which is, I mean, like, that's, I get it, but like, you're down three. Your defense is terrible. It hadn't stopped anybody. If you go for it and don't get it, the Steelers are probably running the ball three times and then kicking a field goal to go up six and make you get a touchdown, which you were going to try to get anyway. Like, it goes back in week one in that Bears Packers game, how you talked about the fact that you wanted the Packers to need 3 points so Mike McCarthy would coach in a conservative fashion. That's what Dirk Cutter did in this spot. And I pin it on him a little bit. He also, by the way, kicked multiple field goals inside the red zone in spots where, and I get that he got him back in the game and they had a shot with the ball down three and plenty of time. I get it. But those were, you know, you're down big. You need to put up the points and come away with the touchdowns there. They had a guy who was at least dealing in the second half. And look, a lot of things could have gone very differently. Mike Evans ended up with a monster game, 137 yards, a touchdown, and six catches. Chris Godwin had the craziest game I've ever seen from a wide receiver, just in terms of he had five catches, 74 yards, and a touchdown. But he also had a fumble early on that really hurt them. And then he could have had two more touchdowns and ended up with like 220 yards. Like, he could have had an absolutely enormous game and just had to settle for a decent game. OJ Howard, I saw Jamie Eisenberg tweet about this, needs to be owned at 100% of fantasy leagues, six catches, 72 yards. Cameron Brate had three catches, 34 yards and a touchdown, but Howard was the third most targeted guy in that passing game and looked fantastic. I agree with Jamie. I think if you need tight end help, OJ Howard is the guy to go get there in fantasy leagues. The rushing offense is non-existent. Peyton Barber, 8 carries, 33 yards. But James Conner was no big shakes. I mean, he had one good week, and he hadn't been great since then. I just thought in a game where, like, would you rather trust Ryan Fitzpatrick to convert a fourth down, or trust your defense to stop Ben Roethlisberger from converting a first down on multiple tries? And you can totally see, like, Mike Tomlin going to Randy Fichtner, the offensive coordinator, and be like, F it, let's get done with this bleep. Go pass the ball three times and we're getting a first down and getting out of here, right?
Yeah, and to go back to your point about them kicking field goals early, where they really lost the game, and I get something happens in the first half, it changes the entire outlook of the game, but they blew the end of the first half sequence as well. They were down 23-7, and they got inside the 5-yard line, mm-hmm. and they ran it on first down, and they didn't run the play clock down. They ran a play before the play clock could expire, saving the Steelers some time. And then they threw it two times from the 3-yard line. What you need to be doing is running that ball on second and goal, either making the Steelers use their timeouts or running the clock down. They end up throwing it twice, two incompletions. Chris Godwin drops the last one. That's on him. Instead of going for it, they kick a field goal. And then the Steelers come down and they score a touchdown before the end of the half. And that's why they're down 20 at the half. I think they really botched the end of the first half, and it really just put them in this script where they were going to need a stop at the end that they couldn't get. So I thought, I don't know if it was a well-coached game. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if either of these teams are good.
I don't think either team is good. I think that either team can put up points. Like, I think both teams are very capable of throwing up a ton of points, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see I tell you what, I wish I was tweeting with Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports about this. He pointed out that there's no reason that Ben Roethlisberger should be lower than Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in fantasy for the rest of the year. And I agree. Like, I knew the Steelers. I was of the opinion before the season that the Steelers defense would be terrible. And I was right. Their defense is not going to magically get better, I don't believe. I miscalculated just how good Ben could be for fantasy, though, because he's going to be throwing the ball a ton. Le'Veon Bell is now holding out, and they just don't have a defense. Like, he's just going to have to keep throwing. And I think that we're going to see a monster year from Ben Roethlisberger as a result, but I don't think it's necessarily going to correlate to a ton of wins for the Steelers because they can't stop anybody. And they got every break in the world in this game against the Bucs, and they still could barely close them out.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick today had the three picks, but he also had three touchdowns at 400 yards, and fantasy-wise, that's still a great performance. And I think Ben, maybe not to that degree, are going to have those games where he can throw three picks in the first half, but then that just means the Steelers are going to be down 21, and they're just going to be throwing the ball every single play in the second half. And in that sense, he's going to be a top 10, top five fantasy quarterback the rest of the way. I think the more interesting quarterback here to talk about, though, is Fitzpatrick, because at halftime...
Nice job. Yeah, of course he's the more interesting quarterback to
We were writing him off as Fitztragic. Jameis just got his job back because Jameis Winston is now eligible to report to the Bucs facility tomorrow. So he can play against the Bears on Sunday.
And let me ask you this then. At halftime, were you of the opinion that the Bucs should give Jameis the job on against the Bears on Thursday?
No, wait.
I have a better question for you. You're a Bears fan. Who do you not want to start on Thursday?
If I want to play Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Exactly. Okay, well that's the answer right there. Like, you would rather have Fitzpatrick play than Jameis. And you don't like Jameis at all. I don't like Jameis,
but I think the Fitzpatrick decline is coming at some point. Yep. And if I'm the Bucs, I'm looking at it like this. We just got two wins against two playoff teams a year ago, Super Bowl contenders coming into the year, nearly beat the third team. I'm going to take what Fitzpatrick gave us, a 2-1 record, and I'm going to be fully satisfied with it. I'm not going to test my luck. And you know what? Jameis is supposed to be the franchise quarterback, and they are operating under the belief that he is their guy long term. And if they think that, I don't understand how you can sit him behind Fitzpatrick. I know Fitzpatrick played well in the second half. You were talking about how, you know, one of the interceptions was a tip pass. Mike Evans maybe messed up on another one. Godwin dropped a touchdown. But I also think Fitzpatrick threw a couple interceptable passes there in the second half that the Steelers just couldn't hang on to. What I was saying during the game is Fitzpatrick, to me, is a quarterback I love to watch, and I think he's good for the league because one second he's scrambling for 18 yards, and then the next play he's throwing up a Hail Mary with 10 minutes left in the game to Mike Evans in double coverage. I love him as long as he's not playing for my team. And so as a Bears fan, I would rather see him because I think there's as good of a chance he throws for four interceptions and no touchdowns as he throws did what he did today. So
I think you're right. Like, I mean, I think if I was a Bears fan, I don't want the Bucs to start Jameis. But I think that given what we have seen from Ryan Fitzpatrick, how he led them back in the second half, how he played in the first 2 weeks, how he's gotten them to 2-1, the fact that it's a short week, they can, it's really kind of practically difficult to start Jameis Winston when he's reinstated on a Tuesday. It's practically difficult to start him on a Thursday when you have a guy who's playing well. So I am fine with them starting Fitzpatrick against the Bears, but I think that if they look bad on offense or he throws three picks again, then you have to go with Jameis. And it's worth noting, I saw this conversation between Chris Brown at Smart Football and Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com, but they're, you know, just Brown was talking about how once Todd Monken took over the play calling for the Bucs, and the, you know, that he's never seen a guy who ran a pure air raid in college and also ran like a pro style system at the NFL level, call plays in those same aspects in different formations. And I agree, it's really impressive how he's called plays. But Rosenthal pointed out that like both Jameis and Fitzpatrick played great in the preseason after Monken took over. And that's something to consider. Like, is this Ryan Fitzpatrick being great, or is Todd Monken just a sick offensive coordinator? Because if Jameis will come in and run these same type of plays and look the same way, you want Jameis there. He's the better quarterback.
Well, what I think is going to be really revealing is if Jameis comes in, and I don't know if it's going to happen this week. I agree with you. I don't think the Bucs will do it. I think Fitzpatrick played well enough there to not get benched.
Yes.
But what's going to be interesting, when eventually Jameis does play, because he probably will play at some point, if he is suddenly struggling and this offense doesn't look good, is that an indictment of Jameis Winston? Because
yes.
So I think Jameis is probably looking at that as he's got legitimate pressure behind him, and not in the sense that Fitzpatrick is going to replace him in the long term. But if Jameis struggles over the course of the rest of the season, I think there are we talked about how his contract is going to be coming up, and they're going to have to decide if they want to make him the $25 million guy, throwing his off the field issues, which you can't ignore. This is a contract year in so many ways for Jameis Winston, and it doesn't help him. It helps him in the sense that the Bucs are 2-1 and they could make the playoffs. And if he goes to the playoffs, he's definitely getting the contract. But it doesn't help him in the sense that you have this guy setting NFL records and you have to replace him. And if you don't do well, everyone's going to be screaming for that guy. And they're going to say, look, Ryan Fitzpatrick set NFL records in this offense and you can't do that. But, so I think it's a tough situation for Jameis. Not that I have sympathy for him because it's a self-created situation he's found himself in. But if I'm Jameis, in a way, I don't really want to come in this game. You're playing against a good Bears defense that can rush the passer. Fitzpatrick was under pressure tonight. I think the Bears can definitely get to whoever's playing quarterback for the Bucs. No one's going to remember that first half from tonight. Bucs fans are only going to remember the second half. I would rather, if I'm Jameis, come in after Fitzpatrick has one of his vintage letdowns.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's a no-win situation if you start Jameis unless he just lights up the Bucs on the road against what we've seen to be a very good defense. By the way, I love, I don't know what it is. I love the Bears' first half line again against the Buccaneers. I mean, Mitchell Trubisky's definitely going to lead a touchdown drive in the first quarter, right?
Probably.
Definitely.
They didn't do it. They didn't do it against the Cardinals.
Cardinals defense is better than the Bucs. Bucs defense stinks.
No, you're right. Not to get off topic from the Bucs, but Matt Nagy's press conference today actually kind of went after Trubisky a bit. Was very specific in criticisms, and I thought that was a little bit revealing. I'm not saying he's going to bench Mitchell Trubisky or anything like that,
narrator voice. He's not.
Right. Well, they did pay a lot of money for Chase Daniel, but I thought it was a little bit revealing that he's the first 2 weeks he was very protective of him. And it seemed like he was a little bit less protective, was more willing to admit when reporters were asking about specific criticisms that, yes, this is a concern.
It should be a concern. He hadn't looked very good, but this is not a Mitchell Trubisky podcast. If you want to watch Mitchell Trubisky and watch all of Mitch's games, you can go to NFL.com/pick6 and get a free 7-day trial of NFL Game Pass. I was watching Sean today, a little Raiders and Dolphins. And it's a teaser alert for my used NFL Game Pass for my quarterback rankings piece. I have to go back and watch all these quarterbacks play. Got to jam in as many as I can between Monday and Tuesday. The ones, you watch them on Sunday, but then you want to go back and examine the throws, look how they looked in the offense. You have a hankering about something that you want to see. The only way to do it is NFL Game Pass. You get every single game on the NFL schedule. You can watch the broadcast version. You can watch the condensed version. You can watch the all 22. No one grinds all 22 like Sean Wagner McGuff. And, you got to have NFL Game Pass to do your job, right?
Absolutely. And for the record, maybe it's because I had already watched the Dolphins game on Sunday night that I was talking up Ryan Tannehill.
You watched the Dolphins game on Sunday night on NFL Game Pass?
Yeah.
It was during
the game. Gotcha. I had it on, and Sunday night game was boring.
Well, right there. Sunday night game's boring. You fire up NFL Game Pass. You can watch another game and get some info on what happened around the NFL. Go to NFL.com/pick6. And you can get a free 7-day trial. Go do it. Ryan Tannehill is going to lead my quarterback column piece because I think Ryan Tannehill might be good, Sean.
Wow. If only someone was telling you this 24 hours ago.
We talked about it on the podcast 24 hours ago.
You got a lot. I know. And you guys were crushing me for saying that.
I didn't crush you. We crushed you for saying.
Ryan was crushing me, but Ryan was crushing me for everything.
He was crushing you because the Steelers hadn't lost and. He was telling you – he was mad that you said you would trade Mitchell Trubisky for Ryan Tannehill.
If age and contract wasn't a thing, yes.
All right. There you have it. Sean buries it. Would you trade Mitchell Trubisky for Jameis Winston?
No. Oh, no way.
All right. Would you trade Mitchell Trubisky for Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Okay. We got to end this podcast.
All right, Ty, let's get down to Brady Quinn, the man, the myth, the legend. You can follow Brady at Third Goal. Sean, thanks for hopping on, buddy.
Thanks, man.
All right, Brady, it's that time of the day, that time of the week, actually. It's the Brady Quinn Football Show.
Yay!
Featuring Will Brinson. Eric Kay and I were actually joking about that. We're going to call the Tuesday show. We're recording this Monday for Tuesday. People that are listening can follow Brady on Twitter at 3RD_goal. We're going to call this the Brady Quinn Football Show with Will Brinson. And we're going to like get theme music for it and stuff like that.
I'm not even on the majority of the show. I get like 20, 30 minutes at most.
Well, and so on today's show, Stephen O is also going to join us and break down these rookie quarterbacks. But I want to get to some other stuff around the NFL with you because there's a lot of, this is a fun season so far, Brady. This is much better than 2017. There's a lot of good storylines. One of those storylines, and you had mentioned previously, Adam Gase, a guy that you worked with, right? In Denver. I went back and watched Ryan Tannehill's game against Oakland. Is Ryan Tannehill good?
I think he's proving to be good at operating Adam Gase's offense.
Yes.
I think the year off last year helped him. Even though you could have made the case going into the playoffs, he is playing some of his best football of his career. Now, if you went back and watched the game, some of those stats are a little bit padded, okay? That little jet sweep pass they got a couple touchdown passes off of. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it on this. I do take credit for that, all right?
Wait,
if you
really?
Go back to my time with the Denver Broncos back in 2011, there was a backup quarterback sitting in a quarterback room with a quarterback coach named Adam Gase. And he was looking for ideas of helping to build up, let's just say this quarterback, he might have been left-handed, his completion percentage. So I was scouring through college tape to find easy completion plays. And it just so happened a kid named Geno Smith was playing at West Virginia, and he was really essentially catching the shotgun snap, pushing the ball forward to a kid named Tavon Austin, who ended up scoring like 5 touchdowns in one game off that single most play. And then what's brilliant about it is if you catch the shotgun snap and if you toss it forward and the wide receiver drops it, it's incomplete, right? The ball goes back to the line of scrimmage, no harm, no foul. If you were to catch the shotgun snap and try handing it off and the ball falls, well, one, it's a live ball. And then two, there's potential if you just fall on it right there, you're going to lose 3-4 yards. So it's a wonderful play. I'm glad we're starting to see it more and more in the NFL. But I do want to take some credit for that this past
week. Wait, do you think that Andy – because Andy Reid has been using that for years. Matt Nagy uses the shovel pass on the interior like to Trey Burton.
The shovel pass is different than the jet sweep pass. The shovel pass has been around forever. Hell, I remember throwing – I actually checked to it versus – San Diego back in 2009 when I was with the Cleveland Browns.
Wow.
It's the jet sweep pass that's different. So you've got a guy coming in motion,
yeah,
and you're trying to time it up where you catch the shotgun pass, just push it forward, and he catches it. That hasn't been around that long.
Andy Reid Andy Reid used that in week one against the Chargers twice. Two of Patrick Mahomes' touchdowns were one-yard jet sweep pitches to Tyreek Hill coming across the middle. So are you saying that you get credit for the jet sweep jumping from West Virginia in college football to the NFL? Because I'm fine giving it to
you. Not to the NFL, but to trying to give that play to Adam Gase at the time, who was our quarterback coach in Denver. That was one of my ideas of how we would help our quarterback improve his completion percentage. And so I remember watching that film, taking it upstairs to him and saying, we got to get this in, check out this play. And unfortunately, at the time, our offensive coordinator was Mike McCoy. I don't know that it made it all the way up the totem pole, so we never got that particular play.
I was about to say, I don't remember that particular left-handed quarterback who shall remain nameless actually executing that. By the way,
we did have Eddie Royal, who would have been perfect for that.
Oh, man, he would have been good for that.
See?
Speaking of Mike McCoy, what are the Cardinals doing? I know we talked about them last week, and I don't want to spend a bunch of time berating Steve Wilks, who's a first-year head coach, and going over an 0-3 team. But it really grinds my gears, Brady, to see the Cardinals decide to bring in a rookie quarterback for his first ever snaps with 2 minutes left in the game against Khalil Mack and a terrifying Bears pass rush after they eschewed the decision to do so the week before when they were trailing 34-0 and could have gotten him some not easy snaps against the Rams, but at least some snaps in a game that was meaningless. And they just throw him to the wolves in a 2-minute drill. That made no sense to me.
It didn't make a whole lot of sense only because he's going to be ill-prepared for the moment at that point in time. But if you're Steve Wilks, you're probably saying to yourself, we need a spark. We need to do something to get back into this game. So why not give Josh Rosen an opportunity? Because an optimist tends to look at a scenario as, you know, no one's going out there expecting him off the bench coming in cold to save the day. Mm-hmm. But if he does, then he is the savior. So now he looks like, you know, the savior of your team moving forward. He's going to be the starter. He's going to be the starter anyway. But, you know, I think at that portion of the game, it's pretty unfair considering he probably didn't get many reps during the week and you're going against one of the better pass rushing teams now in the NFC. And all, by the way, they know that you have to throw the football, which never usually works out well for quarterbacks. So, yeah, all those things were a bit unfair, but that's kind of life in the NFL, man. Like, fair is what you pay to get on a bus. It's not the situation or circumstance that you get thrown as a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, Josh Rosen will survive, you know, having to be paid millions of dollars to be the quarterback, and he wants to play, and it looks like he's now going to be the starter. Steve Wilks announced it. Do you like the move by both the Browns and the Cardinals at this point to go with the rookie quarterbacks? Clearly, you know, Cleveland maybe less of an option, but the way that Baker Mayfield played, my goodness.
I think, you know, Baker Mayfield looked better operating the offense than Tyrod Taylor did Thursday. I think he's probably – it makes sense to move forward with him. He's the number one overall pick. It was only a matter of time before he'd go in, and at this point, you hadn't won a game. So given how he performed in the second half, that one's a no-brainer. And in Arizona, I think you got to give him reps and an opportunity. You're going to have a slim chance of making the playoffs as it is. Why not get him out there? Get, you know, his clock started sooner than later at getting some of those reps. And Josh Rosen might be the one that's most prepared to handle playing in the NFL. I think he's smart. I think his game relates very well or translates very well to the NFL level. So I think he'll be able to handle some of the different things defenses throw at him. Now, the only issue for him is he's got to get the ball out quick because he's not very mobile or athletic. He's not going to really be able to avoid a pass rush.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem with that offensive line too. And things have to get better for the Cardinals, you would think, but I don't know. That offense has not been very creative. Larry Fitzgerald not very involved in this, maybe his final season if he keeps playing like this. And David Johnson got a receiving touchdown on a wide-open catch from Sam Bradford, but very unimpressive start there in the desert for Mike McCoy. Where are we at on the – I know we talk about this every week, but where are we at on the Patrick Mahomes scale? I mean, this is nuts. Like, I didn't expect him to regress this week, but I think the Broncos and the Jaguars will present interesting tests, yes?
Yes, and I think the reason why I'm looking for – I don't want to say a regression, but maybe a fall back down to reality is this. Go back through and watch a lot of the throws.
He has, by the way, this is a next-gen NFL stat number. Of all the quarterbacks eligible for the stat, he has the least number of throws into tight windows. And that's not a knock on him. He's just throwing to wide-open dudes.
Well, and it's kind of a combination of things, right? For starters, it's Andy Reid. Like, the brilliance of him, especially early in seasons. I mean, we saw this team start off 5-0 last year, okay? There were dudes running wide open last year, too. This isn't a first for this team. The other part is, you know, you have mismatches like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Not only are those guys easier to throw to at times, depending on how you formation things to get them open, but they also create openings for everyone else. Like, everyone's so preoccupied with those two guys or Kareem Hunt out of the backfield or Sammy Watkins, who I haven't even mentioned yet, that Anthony Sherman runs free or a backup tight end ends up running into the end zone wide open. All of a sudden, like, everyone else having production and scaring you to death ends up making everyone else's job easier. And that's where this team's at right now. No one knows how to defend all the different options. 9 different guys have caught a touchdown pass. I would imagine, you know, spreading the football around will continue, but I don't necessarily imagine that this will be or continue to be as easy as it has been for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs.
One would think. I mean, like, he's complete. Like, he has a 14% touchdown rate. It's impossible. You can't keep that going. And I would note, too, that Alex Smith in 3 games last year had 776 yards, 7 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, completing like 76% of his passes. So, I mean, he didn't have the eye-popping touchdown numbers as much as Mahomes did. But this is something we see from Andy Reid's teams, as you pointed out. Like, and then teams sort of kind of catch up to him a little bit. I don't know. I mean, he is going to regress. He has to regress because he can't throw. What's the math? You're the Notre Dame math engineering genius. He would have 900 touchdowns at this pace. Is that right?
No, I mean, look, I'll say this much. Before the game, he was on pace for 80. I don't necessarily want to go into the math after 3 games and throwing 3 more. So
right.
We won't make it that much.
74.56 is what the answer is.
Yeah, there you go.
What about the – who's – oh, yeah, I got a question for you. Like, as a – you know, I mean, everybody people who don't know this, I point this out every week, but I didn't play professional football. So I don't know what it's like to worry about the look ahead game. Do you think the Vikings were looking ahead to the Rams?
No, no one ever does that. There's honestly, there's so much respect for every opponent that you play, and that you, and you really do know that on any given Sunday, any team can beat any team. I mean, that's why it's like, you think the Bills went in there and were thinking, oh no, we got to go on the road and play Minnesota. We can't beat these guys. No. I mean, think about it from the opposite side of that conversation. So no team overlooks it. For starters, it's your job, and you're so dialed in and you're so detailed with how you go about game planning. You don't even think about that next opponent. I think that happens more in college than it does the NFL. But for the Minnesota Vikings, I think what was disturbing about it is it's almost like you can't trust them. You know, like you had this team build up because all they were missing was a quarterback. So they finally got their quarterback and they went toe to toe with the Green Bay Packers at home to a tie after winning week one. And so you kind of came away thinking like, man, this team's like a playoff team. This team's maybe a Super Bowl team. And then they cheated on you. Like they literally like dropped the ball, cheated on you, and like broke your heart because they lost to a team at home that they had no business losing to. That looked awful the first couple weeks, and then all of a sudden emerged, you know, to be this amazing, jaw-dropping plays by their quarterback Josh Allen. Like it made me fearful of every single game for the rest of this year. Like because of that loss, I think I'll second guess picking them in any game from here on out the rest of the season because they have that in them. Like that's in their DNA as a team.
You sound like somebody who's dealt with heartbreak before, Brady.
Once or twice.
No, but I mean, like you're right though. Like I objectively just trusted the Vikings at home to take care of business against inferior teams the way that they did the 49ers in week one. And now looking at it, I worry the two biggest flaws I think that I worry about with the Vikings are one, their offensive line, which is just not a good unit. And it's like they couldn't run the ball at all and they were forced to throw with Cousins. And then two, I do wonder a little bit about their game planning from an offensive coordinator and like not knocking John DeFilippo, but to have that imbalance that they had against Buffalo, I get that they were down big, but try to establish the run. Try to get something going to build up drives because Kirk Cousins was under siege, coughing the ball up. And then I sort of wonder a little bit, like, I know that Kirk Cousins is an upgrade over Case Keenum, but there are certain aspects of Kirk Cousins that I'm not sure are an upgrade. Does that make sense?
A little bit, not really. I feel like the aspects you're talking about are – you know, Keenum may be a little better athlete. Maybe yes. He takes more chances, a little gutsier than that. That's all good and fine. I think here's what the Minnesota Vikings were betting, that Case Keenum couldn't replicate that season he had a year ago. And we're witnessing that right now with the Denver Broncos. No matter how we go about comparing those two quarterbacks, I think in the end, it's going to look like Minnesota made the right decision. And I think they did. Now, whether or not Kirk Cousins gets them to a Super Bowl, that's a whole other story. I mean, this Thursday night game they've got coming up, Everson Griffin, could potentially miss that game. Dalvin Cook could miss that game. Not only Marcus Sherrills as well. All those guys are questionable at this point in time in the week. And it's a short week, right? And Trey Waynes as well. Throw him in the mix. Yep. All those guys are questionable in a short week, which means, you know, maybe you need, you know, some offensive production from the running game or that, you know, pass rush or cover guys going up against a very good Rams team on Thursday night. So it'll be interesting to see how they, you know, come back from this loss, but also if any of those guys are able to play.
You point out Case Keenum, through three games last year, he'd completed 61% of his passes, 755 yards. What am I looking at? Is that right? The Minnesota Vikings? Sorry, I may have blacked out. What the hell is going on?
Are you drunk, Will?
I don't know. I don't think I am drunk. No, this is right. Did the Minnesota Vikings lose two of their first three games? That doesn't look right. What am I looking at with the regular season? Anyway, Case Keenum has not looked good. We'll just leave it at that. Am I drunk? I don't think so.
You're on some sort of substance or some sort of high. I'm going to try to look this up to verify. I do remember them losing a game early, which surprised everyone, and they got.
Okay. I screwed this up.
They beat New Orleans, then right. They lost the Steelers, then they won against Tampa.
But Case Keenum didn't play in week one against the Saints. Okay, that's why. All right, my apologies there. At any rate, yeah. Case Keenum 1-2 in his first three games last year with the Vikings. The Vikings' first four games, of course, but he hadn't thrown any interceptions. He has now, through three games with the Denver Broncos in a system that was theoretically supposed to make him more efficient by using his athleticism and getting him out on the edge and letting him throw in these play action spots. He has now thrown five picks including 3 in a week 1 win, 1 in a week 2 loss, and then 1 in a terrible 27-14 loss at Baltimore. Is that more about Baltimore being good or more about Denver being bad?
It's a little bit of both. I think for starters, we've seen Case Keenum kind of cool off after week 1. And I think Baltimore, look, they've got a good defensive front. They make you one-dimensional. They've got a pretty solid secondary as well. So give them some credit. And I do think they're a much improved team this year. I think that's a team to look out for to potentially win the division or be a wild card spot.
Yeah.
Like, I think this could be a year in the AFC where I know everyone's hot on the Dolphins right now. And you know, to me, even though they're leading the AFC East, I still think it's New England's division to win. But they'll be competing for a wild card spot. And I do think that, you know, if they don't get it, it's either the Chargers or pretty much one, you know, two of those three teams from the AFC North, whichever one doesn't end up winning the AFC North division. So it'll be interesting to see how things continue forward with them. And as we watch these other rookie quarterbacks play, maybe Joe Flacco, that chip on his shoulder, gets bigger and bigger and bigger
yeah.
just to make sure they holds off Lamar Jackson.
I'm holding a Ravens to win the Super Bowl ticket at 50-1. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I'm rooting hard for the Ravens to win the Super Bowl. Because it would pay off nicely. 50-1 is always a pretty good odds. Would did you watch a second of Tennessee Jacksonville? And it's okay if you say no.
No, I actually wasn't able to. I saw some highlights. And
really? Kinda, you found a highlight.
Yeah.
You found a highlight. Good for you.
Well, yeah. It's whatever the NFL puts up as propaganda to make you watch their product and calling that a highlight. Yeah.
I think this is my concern with Jacksonville, is that as good as they might be on defense, as dominant as they might be in the run game at times, for whatever reason, they have just these moments where Blake Bortles is bad and the offense isn't going and they lose 9-6 to the Titans.
That is another situation where I don't know how you feel about this Jacksonville Jaguars, because I looked at the Vegas odds today and guess who's number 2 to win the Super Bowl? Best odds, it would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that scares the hell out of me that you cannot beat the Tennessee Titans. I understand their divisional opponent. I get that. I think that gives worse teams even more of an edge. But you went against Blaine Gabbert for a minute and then a banged up Marcus Mariota, and you still couldn't figure out how to score more points. And I don't even care if you're trying to score defensively. But I mean, because that's the Jacksonville Jaguars team that can. But, you know, for me, looking at the job that Mike Vrabel's done the past 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
it's remarkable. And Matt LaFleur, their offensive coordinator, that's a name to keep in mind at the end of the year when we're talking about the next, you know, young hot head coach. Matt LaFleur is going to interview for a number of jobs, and I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't take it.
Wow.
The biggest question becomes with Marcus Mariota and his inability to stay healthy and his inability to have production, at what point do you start looking at this team and saying maybe they're a team that's looking for a quarterback after this year?
I think they're among several teams that might look for a quarterback. And you know, they're one of those teams. The 49ers might be too, with Jimmy Garoppolo now with an ACL. Like, if you're the Jets, do you wish you held on to Teddy Bridgewater a little bit longer? Because you could – I'm not saying you're going to get you know, the Titans to trade for him. The 49ers might. Maybe you get a little bit more if you're able to put Teddy Bridgewater out on the market. I don't think Tennessee can extend Marcus Mariota beyond, you know, some sort of Andy Dalton-like deal after this season without at least considering other options, right?
No, and that's where, you know, you can – always say coulda, woulda, shoulda, right? And in hindsight, it's always going to be 2020 if you would have thought about how holding on to Teddy Bridgewater. I just think there's some options right now as far as backups. If you're a team that's looking for one, like, I don't know, maybe the San Francisco 49ers, Tyrod Taylor, right?
Yeah.
RG3. There's a guy named Johnny Manziel who he spent some time with Kyle Shanahan, didn't he?
Yeah. Wow.
So you can make the case for a number of places that have backups that are, I don't want to say expendable, but for the right price, they're definitely willing to deal them and then figure out, you know, what their plan B is if their starter goes down.
I think one of the more impressive coaching jobs I've seen this season too, but speaking of backups, but I don't know if they trade him because they needed him for a Hail Mary. Jacoby Brissett could be a good option as a backup, former NC State player.
I think as Andrew Luck looked better and better and looks like almost back to 100%, that one would make a lot of sense too.
I don't know about 100%. As somebody who's started games as an NFL quarterback, how would you feel about being pulled off for the last play to let your backup throw a Hail Mary?
That is concerning, but at the same time, I also watched a future Hall of Famer stand outside of his formation as a wide receiver and watch Taysom Hill take a shotgun snap in the Wildcat. And I'm still wondering what that conversation was like when Sean Payton came in and said, "Hey, Drew, we know you're really good, future Hall of Famer. Oh, you're probably going to surpass Brett Favre this week too, as far as, you know, career completions. But we're going to put Taysom Hill in on third and short. Like, I would be sitting there if I'm Drew Brees thinking, what? What'd you say? Like, it kind of giving that Chris Farley, like, the best of in Saturday Night Live. Columbia decaffeinated coffee?
Yeah.
What'd you say? Because I can't imagine him thinking that this game or the potential of that play is better off in someone else's hands.
Right.
But Sean Payton sold him on it somehow. And let me tell you this much. Taysom Hill can roll. So I imagine that play will continue to be shown from time to time in short yardage for New Orleans. But the point is this, you know, you've got the potential when you've got a guy like that, right? Who could do something. So you kind of don't throw anything out the window at this point in time. I kind of forgot what we were talking about in the first place.
No, we were talking about Andrew
Luck.
But by the way, Taysom Hill.
You don't take offense to it, right?
Yeah.
If your shoulder's banged up, you kind of get it, and you know it's a long process.
And, well, I think, too, like, it's kind of interesting because, to me, Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano would have left Andrew Luck out there and let him throw, like, four Hail Marys until his arm fell off. Whereas, like, Frank Reich and Chris Ballard seemed genuinely interested in making sure that Andrew Luck gets healthy. And I am worried that, like, what do defenses start doing, though, now that they know? I mean, Andrew Luck is 2 for 8, Brady, on passes over 20 yards this season. He has only attempted 8 passes more than 20 yards down the field. T.Y. Hilton's average depth of target is, like, 8 yards this year after being 15 yards on average for the last 4 years. Do teams just, like, roll their safeties down and just dare the Colts to go up top?
Well, first off, besides T.Y. Hilton, who's he throwing to again? Isn't that kind of part of it? I mean, I sit there and look at other teams, like Buffalo, for example. Someone brought up the point that, you know, even though Buffalo won, like, we didn't really see Josh Allen use that howitzer of an arm he has. And I was like, well, two options with that. For starters, who's going to get any separation downfield? And right. It's going to take them a little while. Like, you might need to put on, like, a sundial on Kelvin Benjamin. And then the offensive line's not going to be able to hold up. So you really can't do either of those two options. It's kind of similar, right? Like, with Indy, I don't know where Andrew Luck's arm is. That was actually one of the first things I noticed when I saw him in the preseason game versus Seattle. He didn't throw many balls downfield. When he did, it looked like it wasn't coming out well. And I was curious to see how it would be the rest of the season. And I think they've been effective enough where I haven't noticed it quite as much as before. And he has looked like he's had more zip. It's definitely something to keep an eye on moving forward. But I also think it has a little bit to do with their personnel.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Ryan Grant was their number two, receiver on Sunday, with 35 yards, 1 touchdown. Eric Ebron soaking up 11 targets. Naheem Hines getting 5 targets. I've been really impressed with that coaching staff, though. Like, that's a major upgrade at coaching staff. And they've lost these two games. They're 1-2, but they beat Washington on the road. They hung with Philly tough on the road, and they had Cincinnati in a good spot. I think this Colts team is going to struggle. I think they're going to end up winning between four and six games is what I was going to say, but they're going to be five. But they're going to be a pain in the ass for people all year long, I think.
Yeah. Kind of like you're a pain in my ass for all year long.
That's right. I'm going to be a pain in your ass by making you hop on the phone with me all year long.
But is anyone a more pain in anyone's ass than Pete Prisco?
No, he's not. And like, and since Pete doesn't listen to this podcast, we can talk about you're down in Fort Lauderdale. You're down there doing some CBS
studio
sports
stuff.
Studio stuff. I was going to say philanthropic work mostly, but you know, some side.
That was what I was doing today. Pretty cool program, man. We're giving out kids shoes. Kids who are in distress, giving them a new pair of shoes. So
that's awesome.
Cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. All through the Orange Bowl, man. It's awesome.
That's great. So are you going to go to the Orange Bowl? Do you get a free ticket to the Orange Bowl as a result?
You know what? I do get tickets to it. However, and usually we have to work it, especially because it's only my second year being involved. But I call a bowl game. So we call the San Francisco Bowl. I think they're still trying to find a sponsor. So I'll actually be out for New Year's Eve calling that, which is it's fun. It's great. Love it. Don't get me wrong. But this year's it's a semifinal game for the Orange Bowl. They're in the rotation. So kind of stinks that I'm missing out on it.
What does your wife think about the fact that you are now so much involved in the media that you're constantly gone? Or does it matter because you're already a football player to begin with?
She's accustomed to this schedule, and then she knows what comes with football season, where I'm basically just like an absentee parent. I'm like a horrible husband.
And you're a father of two now?
Yeah, father of two. And that's the toughest part, is it sounds terrible. I love my wife, but when I'm gone, it's like I miss my girls. I miss my two little girls, and I feel like I'm not around them enough. So that's the toughest part. My wife, I'm like, we got our whole rest of our lives to you know, live together and hang out with each other, so we're good.
Man, you're really on top of the world. I was going to ask you something else not related to – oh, Pete Briscoe. You're down in Fort Lauderdale, but, like, Pete saunters around that studio like he owns the world, right?
I think he's got a cubicle now or something.
Yeah,
like
he does.
He's got his own space, and I'm like, did you negotiate that? How'd that work out? Because he used to come down often, but he kind of just had like a random space he would pop up at. I feel like I've been there almost as long as him. Probably that's actually not true at all. But I don't have an office or anything. I kind of just float around and have to sit in different spots.
Pete's the longest tenured internet columnist at any major outlet. If anybody. Now that Peter King jumped from
Knowing Pete, it's surprising only because he's a feisty guy, and I'm surprised he hasn't like rubbed someone the wrong way and gotten fired.
It is weird. I think he's been lucky to have feisty bosses who kind of like his feistiness and the fact that he makes people mad. They like that he stirs the pot. I college question for you: what game are you calling this week? For those who don't know, Brady. I make my family watch your games on. No, I didn't. No, we did. But you had Texas TCU this past week, right?
I did. That was a big one for Texas.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's safe to say that they're back or not, because when Joe Testor did it, then they basically went into hiding for 2 years. But two wins versus top 25 teams, in a much better position, I think, with Tom Herman and their team moving forward. They got Kansas State this week in Manhattan. So that's never easy, but. Yeah, I think they're in a much better spot. I've got BYU at Washington, so still kind of breaking down both teams, but Washington's kind of one of those squads that is the Pac-12's kind of only hope at making the college football playoff. Like, after they lost week one to Auburn, they've got to win out, and they have a tough road considering they've got to play the likes of Oregon as well as Stanford, and Stanford obviously plays my alma mater, Notre Dame, this week. So
a
lot on the line. I mean, BYU, with the way they upset Wisconsin, now all of a sudden they're going in – to Washington, or excuse me, Seattle, to take on the Huskies. If you can imagine, they could pull up an upset there. And if Notre Dame beat Stanford, given that Stanford's got to go on the road to take them on, it would be a bad day for the Pac-12.
And Stanford is coming off a crazy win over Oregon in overtime that they had no business winning. Emotional victory in Austin Stadium.
And if you were watching, Justin Herbert, KJ Costello, quarterback for Stanford.
Well, that was going to be my question, because you've been at the forefront of this movement. Like, people are all pumped up about Justin Herbert, but is KJ Costello perhaps the better pro prospect?
I tell you this much. I think based on what David Shaw asked him to do, and it's a pro-style system, he makes all these checks at the line. He handles all the protection, the run-blocking scheme. They really do push the ball vertically down the field. He plays from under center. He's a better athlete than people give him credit, and he's got a strong arm. So when I look at the two players, it's not that Justin Herbert doesn't ooze with potential, but he's going to have a bigger transition than KJ Costello is. And I look at Marcus Mariota, and maybe it's just because they're both Oregon quarterbacks, but I look at him right now and say, where's the growth? Like, I think nowadays more than ever, it's the hardest position to develop. Offensive line's up there too, but the quarterbacks coming into college football, if they aren't an already made product, I think they have a hard time developing and really taking those monumental steps I think you need to be some of the best in the game and to be a franchise quarterback with the same team for 10-plus years. I just think that's going to be rarer and rarer as we move forward, because teams have a lack of patience. They don't want to necessarily build with these guys. And if these kids don't know how to protect themselves, as we see the league trying to do their best to protect them, right, by the roughing the passer rule, then these guys are going to start getting hurt too.
And a good non-Oregon example of that, Mitchell Trubisky, who's sort of struggling to adjust as, even with a good offensive coordinator or good head coach in Matt Nagy, who former Andy Reid offensive coordinator. We'll get you out on this. You mentioned the roughing the passer rule. Clay Matthews said that the league is, quote, gone or going soft. Do you agree or disagree with
here's what I'd say is I don't necessarily want to make the case.
A.J. Hawk is the linebacker you're – related.
Yeah, he's my brother-in-law.
I was like, which long-haired linebacker is
related? Long blonde hair. He chopped it off nice. He got shorter hair. But
that's right.
I would describe the situation in the NFL right now like this. I think they're doing their best to try to protect their faces of each franchise. But the problem is you're taking away the authenticity of what makes football great. Mm. And that's the physicality of it. And there's not many opportunities where quarterbacks can display their toughness. That's one of the things that I always look at in quarterbacks is when they get hit, if they can stand in there, deliver a football and get hit and get back up and do it again, or even take a tough sack and get back up the next play and do something again. These younger guys I always look at to see whether or not they can do it. And the NFL is almost taken out that scenario altogether with the way they're penalizing these defensive players. And I'll just say this. For starters, it's being officiated inconsistent, which is what bothers me the most. If you're going to have such a punitive penalty and you're going to fine these guys, you better be able to do it at least consistently. So every single time we know, all right, that's going to get flagged or that's not a flag, right? And then there's the law of physics, okay? So if I told you that, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, right? Most quarterbacks aren't as big as most defensive ends or outside linebackers, right?
Yep.
Okay. So laws of physics teach us this. Power is equal to velocity times force. What you have is you have a bigger human being standing 7-8 yards away from where a quarterback's going to be. And he's got to sprint and get to that quarterback in 3 seconds or less. And he's got a 300-pound guy who's bigger than him trying to impede him through that process. You tell me how that guy is going to be able to slow himself down to change the manner in which he makes contact, hits, and then lands on top of that quarterback. It's impossible. The laws of physics do not allow that to be possible. And case in point, William Hayes, the defensive end for the Miami Dolphins,
yep,
as he got a sack this past week versus Derek Carr, what did he do? He tried to spin to protect Derek Carr, and in doing so, he tears his ACL. He's out for the season. That, to me, is the issue right now with this rule.
Yep, I'm with you 100%. It is a major problem that the NFL decided to, as it always does, react and be sneaky with and shove it through, and now they're dealing with it in real time instead of addressing in the offseason. Sometimes the NFL is just too cute for its own good. Brady Quinn, follow him at 3RD_goal. That's third goal. Check out his philanthropic efforts, and, of course, watch him on CBS Sports HQ, cbssports.com/live, and you can check him out at Fox Sports calling a BYU-Washington game this weekend. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much. Always fun, Will.
All right, Steven, sorry, I was running late. I don't know why I say this on like podcasts and stuff. Nobody knows I'm running late, but people can just assume I was blindly running late. And we're going to, you were just saying how, but we're going to do 20 minutes. I was saying this. We're going to do 20 minutes on Baltimore sports. And I was joking, but you do have a deep, you know, rich history in Baltimore, right?
Yeah. So I was born in Baltimore County, or technically born in the city. My parents moved from Korea in 67. I was born in 73, youngest of three boys. So sports were a big deal. But the biggest thing is he fell in love with the Orioles and the Colts. So, when we were winning, Baltimore was winning a ton of championships at the time, just between the two sports. And I'm Korean.
Yeah.
You might have guessed, because it's not a very compelling story, or maybe it is more compelling if I was Caucasian. But the first white man I ever met, like, and actually spoke to, shook hands with, was Brooks Robinson.
That's awesome.
At a autograph signing in a Kmart, and I think I still have the autograph somewhere. And then, but then I went to a church, and shared a parking lot with Memorial Stadium. So we'd go to games, and then the Colts left when I was 10. And I stopped watching the NFL. I got into Lawrence Taylor for a little while and kept me into the game. But, when the Ravens came and, had some pretty good success, obviously a lot faster than most teams, it really just took a, just lit up, my
sure,
my whole being started getting absorbed by the Ravens. And then I went so far as to name my son Lewis after Ray Lewis.
I like it.
I almost got into fights since I've joined CBS, simply because people always throw in the, Super Bowl, what happened in the,
I guess he didn't work for CBS, so we can, you can reference it.
Stuff like that just, really aggravates and irritates me. But, that's where it comes from.
Let me ask you this. Where does this year's Ravens team, and I, you and I talked about this a little bit before, but I have a flyer ticket on the Ravens to win the Super Bowl that I got at 50-1 in Vegas. And not, I mean, because I did like the Ravens to be better than people think, but also 50-1, just better value. And then I was big. I picked the Ravens to win the division and the Ravens over. Are you, after the three games in, having seen the Ravens go 2-1 and look pretty good? And for those that don't know, you know, if you go to sportsline.com, all the projections are funneled by the mind of Stephen O. Do you think this Ravens team is better or just about where you expected them to be?
I expected a lot of them, and I think they're where I expect them to be, which was better than 99% of the people out there, being the exception.
Right, the rare because random exception.
I really think that if you look at this team just from the numbers, last year we were one of the certainly top 10, but maybe top 7 or 8 in point differential.
Yep. Three shutouts. Shutouts. That's crazy. You don't see that.
9-7. And two of our losses, one of them was because Eric Weddle in overtime versus Chicago tried to strip the ball instead of tackle Jordan Howard on the Chicago 5.
Yep.
All he had to do was tackle him. We get a short field, and you know Justin Tucker is a god. He'll hit it from wherever, and we'll win. And then the other one was obviously the Cincinnati game, when you know, which is you know 4th and 15. And I, my daughter after that game said, "You shouldn't watch football anymore." I said, "You're absolutely right." She's 7 because I was, you know, demolished. But the point being, we were really, you could really say we were 2 plays away from an 11-win season. And I think that when you factor the fact that you consider the fact that our wide receivers, you know, are historically bad. And I don't think not one of our leading receivers heading into last year, Wallace, Rashad Berryman, and whoever else, and even Macklin, none of them were two of them aren't on rosters. And none were ranked by Dave, Jamie, or Heath in their wide receiver rankings in fantasy this year. So we didn't have a single fantasy ranked player at wide receiver.
Yeah.
And then obviously our leading pass catcher was Ben Watson, who's not on the team anymore. And I don't know how those guys ranked him, you know, obviously probably okay.
I mean, to say that the wide receiver group, the pass catchers last year were underwhelming is a huge understatement.
Always have been, you know. I remember Kamar Aiken had a good year with us, and you know, and this is the state of the wide receiver. I don't apologize for Flacco, believe me. No one has felt my personal rage more than Joe Flacco over the last few years. But at the same time, it's comically bad. And I just love the fact that Ozzie Newsome, who is the greatest GM, was able to admit that, you know what, I can't scout and draft wide receivers. Obviously, it's not in me. I can do everything else.
Right.
I can get compensatory picks like they're, you know, at an unbelievable rate. And I can find, you know, 5th round defensive tackles. And I can find guys like Kenny Young, who looks like, you know, I don't know, the superstar to me after just a few games, but I can't get, you know, draft wide receivers to save my life. So
I wonder if that's like a weak spot developed coming up under Belichick. Isn't that weird that Belichick and Ozzie Newsome have that same weak spot about finding wide receivers?
I guess so. It's like everyone has, you can't be perfect, you know? So I'm just glad that in his last year, he decided to say, you know, enough's enough. Let's just get some professional wide receivers. So me, my friends and family watching the games were just like, this is what other teams experience, that their receivers can actually catch the ball. And it's not an exaggeration. I mean, when I see John Brown, I think this guy is the greatest player I've ever seen, just because we're so used to Torrey. We love Torrey Smith. And we're like, okay, Torrey Smith, he's the best at drawing PI. You know, in Baltimore, our big chunk play is the pass interference. And, you know, we used to say with Breshad Perriman, look, the worst he's going to do is be able to draw a PI. I mean, that was the strategy we had. We figured he's fast. Just jump straight in the air, underthrow it, whatever you got to do to get that pass interference call. Now we have a guy who's not only blazing fast, but he catches it.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a, you know, catch out of bounds the other day. That was awesome. And then he had that 44-yard pass down the field. So when you take a team that was, I mean, I think we were ranked 29th in passing last year, but I think we were really 40th out of 32 teams. And you take a team that's already 9-7, there's a really good defense, and imagine how good they'd be if we actually had any kind of offense. And you throw in, you know, 3 really solid wide receivers. And, you know, and Brown is and Crabtree, you could argue, have star potential, especially for the roles that they have. It's like, geez, how can we not be better than we were last year?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, as long as Suggs doesn't have to play on short rest, then I believe our pass rush will be there most weeks. It just the biggest problem with the Ravens, though, is we get a big head. No one get cockier faster than us. So our whole history, even when we had those years making the playoffs year after year, we'd always, you know, I'm not supposed to curse, but
you can't say
this phrase without it. We'd always crap the bed, you know, once every three games.
Oh, you can say crap the bed on this podcast.
Well,
the Steelers do that too, though. So how do your projections have the, because I want to get to these rookie quarterbacks in a second too, but how do your projections that people can check out over at Sportsline, where we have DFS, we have, picks for every game and every sport against the spread and straight up, and expert picks coming through as well. How do your projections have the AFC North shaking out this season?
I have, I know we can't beat Cincinnati, but I have Baltimore as the solid 63% favorite. I should say, the good thing I like about my computer projections is they are separate from what I really think and what I believe. People like to think, oh, well, you have Baltimore because you're such a homer. I was like, you know, why would I go through all the programming I do? I've gave myself carpal tunnel syndrome. I have like this ergonomic keyboard. I work all the time and I'm doing all these sports. Like, why would I put that at risk? Why would I jimmy the numbers just to have Baltimore win? And plus, I'm one of those glasses half empty guys. So I don't want Baltimore to be predicted to be good. It makes me nervous. So I don't bias the stuff. What the computer has allowed me to do is the computer has its opinion. Yeah, I programmed it, but it's a separate entity from me. So, but I do say we when I refer to Baltimore.
Not Sportsline. We is Baltimore.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what the updated latest odds are, but I have Baltimore at a 63% chance of winning the division, which is extremely high, which is probably twice what the odds say. But that's because, you know, the Bengals aren't a good team unless they're playing us. So I run simulations in two ways. One is the actual games with the actual rosters factoring injuries and everything else. And then the other is if these teams were healthy or at least playing in February in a Super Bowl conditions on a neutral field. And that's kind of like a true power ranking. So if I were to rate the teams into true power ranking, I still have Pittsburgh as the best team in that division, slightly ahead of Baltimore. But I have Pittsburgh only, geez, I'm looking at it, seventh in the AFC in projected wins.
That's
what happened. You're 0-1-1, and so hopefully they're 0-2-1 and after tonight. But I'm not sure what I'd rather have. I'd rather have them dominate tonight, feel good, and sort of relax a little bit next week.
As a Ravens fan, you want them to beat the we're recording this on Monday for Tuesday. I didn't miss that. But you want the Steelers to beat the Buccaneers and then to have and then to be rolling into the next week feeling good about it against the Ravens. All right,
exactly. I don't see us overcoming a winless Steelers team. Plus, right. Here's where I do have. Look, I know this job changed me. When I started doing projections for fantasy for a business I had my own 15 years ago, that was fine. But when we quickly realized we weren't going to make as much money as we needed to, we pivoted to gambling.
Right.
And the second I got into gambling, because I'm not a natural bettor actually, and I think it helps make gambling predictions because you don't get as biased by the bad beats. But tonight I have Pittsburgh as the favorite, and I think they're down to being a +1.5 underdog. So this is where I can overcome my hatred, and it's real hatred of a team, and just go with numbers. Hey, if Pittsburgh wins, covers the spread, then I look better.
You can root for Pittsburgh because it makes you look better. Like I don't have a favorite team anymore. I just root for my picks to be right. I am a little bummed out though, even though I wasn't on this team, that we saw Jimmy Garoppolo go down. And I was looking at the change in projections again from sportsline.com. I mean, this is stunning, Steven. The 49ers go from maybe an 8-win team to like less than a 5-win team, right?
Yeah, I think I think most people would have it even more severe. I think a lot of odds makers might have it more severe than that, because I think that's only around a 4.5 points per game, 4 points per game. But there's a reason why San Francisco, you know, gave him all that money, and they had, was it C.J. Beathard? They had him play 5 games last year, so they know what they have in him. They know how much better Garoppolo is. So, yeah, it's too bad for that team. But then again, you know, maybe, you know, you get a nice draft pick and you come back next year.
Yeah, I mean, and the projections also have the percent for the playoffs with Garoppolo, 31.3%. without him, 1.1%. The 49ers, you look at the Vegas odds too. I mean, they're plus 500 now, I believe, according to the Westgate. It might be even higher than that. I mean, they're basically written off, and it's understandable. You know, like I totally get it. Why they would be written off, you know, at this point, because I think, let me see, 1,000 to 1 now without Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. That is insane.
I mean, the NFC is so much tougher too than the AFC. You know, in my like kind of power rankings, I call it my neutral power rankings, where it's just based on the simulated in a Super Bowl conditions, neutral field. I mean, I have the Miami Dolphins projected for the 5th best record as the 21st best team in the league.
Wow.
And then when you look at the NFC, you know, teams like Carolina are 13th in power ranking, and they're not in the playoff picture right now, even though that they are 2-1. But there's so many teams in the NFC with a 30% plus, you know, chance of making the playoffs. I have to go down all the way to Detroit, which is not bad at 28%. You know, so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 teams in my sims making the playoffs at a pretty decent clip, you know, 30% plus.
Who's the lowest surprise there? Have the Bears jumped the Packers or the Vikings at this point, or?
I struggled. The Vikings dropped I don't know what's the heaviest thing that you can think of dropping, but that's pretty much the Vikings. I think the heaviest thing that you can think of dropping is the Vikings' chances, because I still have them as a much better than average power ranking team, the number 11th best team. But losing in the NFL, obviously it's about winning your division, and losing a game where you should had a 85-90% chance of winning is you know, it's like in getting swept by the Baltimore Orioles this year, you know, 9-0. You just don't let that happen. So it was mad. I mean, I had them obviously, I think, as the number 3 seed last week, and they're down to below Chicago, and they plummeted. Now, the good thing in football is, hey, if they pull off what looks like a miracle now this week, they'll jump right off. If you give me see if I can look at my trying to look for what I think is the scenario if they win on Thursday.
I'm curious. So people are already starting to probably put their picks in for the coming week. They're starting to eye maybe a wager on the Rams and Vikings game. What do you have happening in that game? And this is a huge differential from what the line was before the season. It was Rams -3 if you wanted to bet on it. At the Westgate before the season started. Now it is Rams -6.5 or 7. How do your simulations have that playing out?
Yeah, I have the Rams by 7.5. Wow, and I guess Marcus Peters is probably out, right?
Yeah, I would assume he is not.
So, but I still have, I mean, I think it, when I had him initially in, I had the Rams at 8.5. Mm. So it's just the Rams look like the most talented team top to bottom, and they haven't gone anywhere, right? They've just been sitting in LA, which, you know, I don't know. I it's a pretty fun place, but apparently they get pretty well rested. they traveled to Northern California, and then they traveled, and then they had Arizona come in, and then obviously the Chargers at home. And so they're rested. Minnesota, you know, is not. I mean, I've never played football. For real. And I can only imagine how exhausting it was, the Green Bay game the week before, going to overtime, and then just the emotional drain of that. And then to get, you know, this past Sunday, I don't know. I didn't watch the whole game against the Bills. Did they just concede? I can't imagine.
The Bills defense just kept on them. I mean, the Bills.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Bills just kept winning on defense, and the Vikings offensive line got no push. I mean, it was.
When I was monitoring the game, I was watching the Ravens game, you know, that's all I do, but I had, you know, I was watching our game trackers and everything like that. Over here, besides doing projections, I like to just make sure I'm basically QAing the site and make sure it's working right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was about to write an email saying, darn it, our game tracker's obviously wrong. It wasn't even the score. I was like, how does Minnesota have 5 carries at the first half?
They didn't run the ball at all. Cousins ended up throwing it like 40 times. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like if you get in one of those situations where, you know, where you end up like the Vikings and the Jaguars are the same thing. I think they just need that balance if they want to be a good football team. How about these rookie quarterbacks, Steven? Because you have we now have Josh Rosen starting for the Cardinals officially, Baker Mayfield starting for the Browns officially. Obviously, Josh Allen's going to stay in after that big win in Minnesota. And of course, Sam Darnold is starting for the Jets. How much does the projection change for the Browns and the Cardinals moving forward with Mayfield and Rosen, respectively?
Well, the Mayfield, the guys in the social team like to get like cool numbers and want to, you know, because it gets shared when the team goes from like 20% to 80%. And they said, hey, what's going on with Cleveland since Mayfield took over? And I was like, well, it's a big difference. And I forget that I'm more of a statistician. I said, they went from a 5% chance of making the playoffs to 8.5.
And they're like,
that's not big. I was like, but it's a 60% growth. Yeah, you know, you got to look at it from a growth rate perspective. Right. It's like, well, that's not going to play. It's like, but, you know, the point being Mayfield does improve them a lot on a relative basis. It's a huge upgrade. It just doesn't translate well with, you know, because as we all know by now, I'm a big fan of Baltimore and Pittsburgh has the talent and Cincinnati is still the better team.
Well, and you have the Dolphins who came out hot. The Chargers, the Chiefs are looking like they're going to make the playoffs. The Chargers are still dangerous. I do wonder too, though, but like, what about from a fantasy perspective? Did you see bumps in terms of Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, Carlos Hyde? How do those guys look the rest of the season? Because, you know, when you see Baker Mayfield step out there, you would think that based on how he played versus how Tyrod Taylor played, that these guys would all see bumps in their value, right?
Yeah, they all went. And they're all probably simple math, like, 10 to 15% improvement, which is
that's
a pretty big.
That's
jump.
Huge from a
yeah, because, and also it was time, the same time as, you know, letting Josh Gordon go. So it just gave a lot more targets to people. And the thing, I was always a big Mayfield fan. My stats aren't, my numbers aren't great at evaluating players or extrapolating necessarily. So I have to use kind of what I call analogies when I'm looking at players and, you know, college and the type of stats they put up in the conferences and the level of competition. And I sort of model, create kind of virtual players, almost like in a Madden simulation type situation. And Mayfield, you couldn't find anything really wrong with the guy. And so I believe I was pretty early on when I told people internally here that I would take him number one. This is way, way before probably near the end of the college season.
Wow.
Simply because the only thing that people would say about him was, oh, if he was 6'3", we'd probably take him number one. It's like, but he's 6 foot.
It's the Russell.
Inches,
it's the Russell.
You know?
Right. It's the Russell Wilson corollary.
Yeah, like, yeah. I remember that at the time saying, wait. If Russell Wilson was 6'3", he would be in the conversation with Luck and Robert Griffin. And it's like, yeah. It's like, is it really? Can it really be that big a difference?
Right.
I mean, that's worth like that much. But I think Mayfield is the only guy that didn't have that fatal flaw in my mind. Like Darnold. So I grew up. Lived 12 years in LA and in Manhattan Beach, Redondo Beach area.
That's a good spot.
Yeah. Expensive, man. My house down here is twice as big and costs half as much.
That's right.
But Darnold, guys who, you know, raised in California and go to school there, especially guys like Darnold who already have a turnover issue, it just didn't make sense to me that you could cut that, you know, 1-2 turnover per game average to, you know, 1.2 right. When you go to the pros. It doesn't happen.
In fact, if anything, it spikes like significantly.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Josh Rosen, I know he has every tool. He's supposed to be really smart and everything else. I just can't imagine growing up wealthy in Manhattan Beach because that's really wealthy. And having what it takes to really inspire everybody and just fight through the pain that you're going to deal with. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I just know how lazy and comfortable I got in that area.
Just a man who lived on the beach for several years.
But surely
the Cardinals have to get, like, surely David Johnson's value and the Cardinals' value in general has to get better. I mean, I thought it was stupid. Stupid as all get out to shove Josh Rosen in the lineup with 2 minutes left in the game for his first snaps. But I mean, they have to see an improvement. Like Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson couldn't have been worse through 3 weeks.
So what I don't understand though is, okay, so Sam Bradford, I'm old enough to remember when Sam Bradford was a big deal.
Yeah.
He was super smart and physically gifted and everything else. And there's multiple teams that gave him a lot of money because they thought the same thing. So I know his arm is shot basically. So why did they even roll him out there to start at all if he physically can't do the job anymore? Did he get dumber?
It makes no sense. Like, it makes no sense.
So that makes me wonder, why didn't they start Rosen day one? Why I can't imagine him being that much better. It wasn't like Mayfield where you saw it, right?
Right.
So it leads me to believe it. And the only thing I can assume is that Rosen wasn't that much better or even as good as Bradford. So just because he's newer and shinier object doesn't make him better. When I don't know what percentage of highly drafted quarterbacks succeed, but I don't. I mean, the odds would say that he's not as good as people would hope he would be. And there's a reason why he slipped to what, number 10 was it in the draft?
Yeah,
you know,
So
I don't know. I think plus there's something about. Have you heard any reports about whether he gets along with his teammates?
I mean, I think by all accounts, he's cool with them. I don't know. I mean, it's.
I remember again. I always turn it back to the Ravens, but I remember watching when Matt Leinart was. I believe, I don't know if it was rookie year or second year, but he was like the starter in Arizona, and Kurt Warner was backing him up, and it was a game in Baltimore, and we were up like 21-0, and we had sacked Leinart maybe four times in the first quarter and a half, and then they put in Warner, and it was Anquan Boldin was still there, and Anquan Boldin had a play where he ran over like Ray Lewis, and he had 200 something yard pass, and they almost came back to win. We ended up winning on a Ray Lewis interception, I think, in the end zone. But at that point, I thought two things. God, we have to get Anquan Boldin on our team. But the biggest thing is the offensive line was just going so all out to protect Warner.
Or Warner. Warner. Yeah, yeah.
Because
and then it didn't
they
seem...
so clearly liked Warner.
Yeah.
And this old Warner, who everyone thought was done, right, after his Giants time, you know, we couldn't get near him. Meanwhile, Leinart was demolished. Yeah. And it almost and so there's something to – and as you can see from this past week in football – all the numbers in the world. That's why I'm a big analytics guy in terms of trying to win bets and project fantasy points. I'm not a big analytics guy in terms of trying to make your team better. Because it's such a hard, demanding sport, and it's such a team sport that it's all about how focused you are and how much you care at that moment.
Right.
Just like the Vikings aren't nearly as bad as you know what they showed. It just so when you come into that, if Rosen isn't a guy that everyone is like, we gotta get him out there. You know, I don't see why he's that much better because I know he's prototypical size, but he's not Cam Newton size, and you know, and
right.
So like, and then again,
he's got a bad offensive line too, and like yes. it could get ugly. All right, we got to get out of here because I'm gonna between this and the Brady Quinn interview, we're gonna end up going over an hour, full hour, but we're gonna be doing this every week, and we're gonna move to Wednesdays, right? So we can get the preview.
Yeah.
We'll get the previews ready to go, so we can get people down for the Thursday night.
I have my 40 bullet points for every game though, but you're missing out on some.
Do you want to go through 40 bullet points one by one? We can do that.
Okay. No.
My son needs another hour and a half on his iPad. That'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to do the Ravens thing every week, I guess.
No, right.
So that'll save us 95% of the time.
No. But we'll be banging through some previews and stuff and getting projections as well. What's the promo code for Sportsline that they should use to get in on that?
I don't know.
They can use Will.
You don't need a promo code.
Promo code Will.
It's such an affordable site for what they get for $10 a month. Just pay the full price.
That's true.
I can't imagine this. Do you understand that? That's what I, you know, when I said in marketing meetings. It's like, why are you, the promo code, we'll give something away that is worth $100 a month for one.
It is worth $100. That's a good selling point. It's worth $100 a month. You can get it for $10 a month. You can get the first month for $1. Use promo code Will when you go to sportsline.com to sign up. Stephen O, you're the man. Thanks, buddy.